If you look at where I sleep, she says, you'd think I wasn't a Kenyan citizen. You'd think I was a refugee.
China-backed expressway controversy. It's Thursday, December 30th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Chinese political asylum seekers, the year in U.S. diplomacy. Technology disrupts the art world. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Rights groups in Kenya are pushing authorities to resettle tens of thousands of squatters evicted before the holidays to make way for a Chinese-backed expressway. Brenda Molinya reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Kenyan Lucy Wangare, in her 40s, cleans a makeshift tent that has provided her family flimsy shelter since October when Nairobi city authorities evicted them from their home of almost two decades. She, her husband, and her sister spend the holiday season living in the tent, enduring cold and wet nights. City authorities evicted more than 40,000 squatters like Wangare from Mukuru Kwajenga slum and razed their homes to make way for construction of the Nairobi Expressway. What is left of the Mukuru slum looks like a wasteland, with scores of makeshift tents forming a small island. Authorities gave them just days' notice to vacate their homes, says Wangare. If you look at where I sleep, she says, you'd think I wasn't a Kenyan citizen. You'd think I was a refugee. Wangare says they used to have property and houses, but right now they've been left destitute. She blames Kenya's government. The $500 million elevated expressway aims to ease Nairobi's notorious traffic by connecting the main international airport to the city center and the wealthy suburbs. The Chinese state-owned China Road and Bridge Corporation is building and financing the expressway, which should be working in 2022 and will collect the tolls for nearly three decades. Despite critics calling it a road for the rich, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta defended the project while taking a tour of it the day before Christmas.
The difference that is being occasioned by the road building, by the drainage being put in, by the sewage being put in, I do believe that within another 2 years, Nairobi will be a truly 21st century city, catering for its population in a positive manner and in a manner befitting our people.
But Kenyan right activists fought the government for not striking a balance between the need for infrastructure and human dignity for those evicted. 25-year-old Anami Daudi is with the Mukuru Community Justice Center.
It's so traumatizing. People are having mental issues here. We have other special challenges here. They should get like special attention. But you find out that even the facilities that we have around, they can't maybe even accommodate or maybe to create that space to provide such services.
The single squatters left homeless like 38-year-old Pauline Gedoni struggle with security fears. It's very dangerous to spend the night here, she says, especially for us women. Gadone says the men can defend themselves if attacked, but she can't fight anybody. If someone attacks me and steals my property, tells me to leave, she says, I will have no choice but to obey them. City authorities' promises to compensate and help resettle the evicted families have yet to come true. Brenda Molinya, for VOA News, Nairobi.
Read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Indonesia allows boat with 120 Rohingya refugees to land. How China snuffed out threats across Asia in 2021. China slams U.S. over space station's close encounters with SpaceX satellites. Immigrants welcome Afghan refugees inspired by own journeys. Taliban release head of private TV network. Find complete coverage on all these stories on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Political repression is prompting thousands of Chinese to seek asylum in countries outside of China, including the U.S. each year, claiming persecution or well-founded fear of persecution based on their race, religion, nationality, political opinion, or other factors. VOA's Mike O'Sullivan spoke with two immigrants from China who reached the United States by very different paths.
Bugra Arkin owns a Uyghur restaurant in Los Angeles. He studied public policy in the United States and is an ethnic Uyghur Muslim from Xinjiang province, where more than 1 million Uyghur Muslims, including his father, a publisher, have been held in re-education camps. The United States and human rights groups call China's suppression of Uyghurs and their culture a genocide.
In 2018, my father and my uncle, my cousin, and some other my friends, they disappeared, and then I heard they were taken to the concentration camp.
But his family could get no information, and no Chinese lawyer would help. Now in Los Angeles, Arkin was granted asylum in 2018. His wife, also a Uyghur, is a U.S.-trained lawyer who has joined the U.S. Air Force. Yet the couple received two frightening phone calls from a Chinese-speaking caller earlier this year.
She's threatening me. She's threatening, that's threatening my 2-year-old daughter. She's saying, like, we are closely watching you. We will kill you. You will going to die.
He was told to stay silent, but says he will not.
Even this can give me strength to speak up for my father and my Uyghur people.
Another asylum applicant, Jie Li Jian, has also received threatening phone calls, saying China is watching him and insisting he keep quiet. In China, he was incarcerated repeatedly, burned with cigarettes, and suffered beatings that cost him several teeth. All vivid memories, says this political activist from Shandong province. He recalls two forced stays in psychiatric hospitals and torture in a police facility in 2009.
When we arrived in a compound, they pushed my head into a big water tank. I think they've been through this kind of training. They won't let you die, but won't let you feel good. They make you suffer to where you feel like you're suffocating on the brink of death.
Between 2015 and 2018, Jie took part in commemorations of the June 4th, 1989 Tiananmen massacre in China. Again, he was detained and tortured after re-entering the mainland.
The Chinese government would torment its citizens using any method. If you are killed, then you are killed. If you are disabled, then you are disabled. If you accuse them of wrongdoing, they will continue to arrest you, and what's waiting for you is prison. It's a mental hospital.
China denies mistreating those in custody, but human rights groups have documented the torture of criminal suspects and activists and mass incarceration of ethnic Uyghurs. Both men worry about the fate of their families in China, but say they feel compelled by their plights to speak out. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Happening now in Asia, vocal pro-democracy website Stand News was shut down Wednesday in Hong Kong after police raided its office and arrested six current and former editors in a continuing crackdown on dissent in the city. A senior police official insisted the arrests do not affect people's civil rights and freedom of publishing. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Welcome back to VOA Asia. The Biden administration came into office vowing America is back, with Secretary of State Antony Blinken pledging to work closely to boost ties with allies. But as VOA's Cindy Sain reports, unexpected crises, coups, and conflicts have also commanded the top U.S. diplomats' attention in 2021.
Hopes were high among many American allies and observers around the world as veteran diplomat Antony Blinken was sworn in as the 71st U.S. Secretary of State in January.
It's a new day for America. It's a new day for the world.
Speaking to State Department staff on his first day, Blinken set high expectations.
The world is watching us intently right now. They want to know if we can heal our nation. They want to see whether we will lead with the power of our example, if we'll put a premium on diplomacy with our allies and partners to meet the great challenges of our time, like the pandemic, climate change, the economic crisis, threats to democracies, fights for racial justice, and the danger to our security and global stability posed by our rivals and adversaries.
But the promises in January were met by a hard reality on the ground. A February military coup in Myanmar, followed by a violent crackdown on tens of thousands of protesters, the July assassination of Haiti's president, and an October military coup in Sudan are just a few of the international crises the Biden administration has dealt with in 2021. Despite foreign challenges, analysts say U.S. President Joe Biden and his close confidant Blinken have been successful in their key goal, repairing what they see as critical relationships and alliances damaged by former President Donald Trump's America First worldview. Brian Katulis is vice president for policy at the Middle East Institute.
By and large, I think they've been able to stick to their broader game plan from having President Biden go to Europe in the spring and try to deepen partnerships and alliances with our European democratic allies. And similarly, in Asia as well, to try to rally countries that were a little uncertain about where the United States was going.
But analysts say America's chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan in August tested the Biden administration, along with France's angry response to a submarine deal between the U.S. and Australia. Michael Kimmage is with the German Marshall Fund. He spoke to VOA.
The alliance with Europe has been repaired. There have been hiccups along the way, for sure. Afghanistan and the AUKUS submarine deal are two pretty big hiccups, but the alliance is functioning much better than it used to.
As 2022 approaches, China and other U.S. adversaries are watching to see how Biden and Blinken handle the massive Russian military buildup along Ukraine's border, and whether the United States honors its commitments to the territorial integrity of its allies. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Finally on VOA Asia, since an artist garnered $69 million earlier this year for digital artwork tied to blockchain technology, artists and fans have taken an increasing interest in so-called non-fungible tokens. VOA's Tina Trin has more.
The worlds of art and technology were on display at a recent show in New York City.
I think the best and most talented artists have always looked to technology, to new formats, to be able to take their art to the next level.
That includes turning digital art into non-fungible tokens, or NFTs, digital collectibles linked to blockchains, encrypted distributed ledgers that validate their origins and authenticity. Liz Yang works at Definity, a nonprofit with its own blockchain network called the Internet Computer. Definity helps artists turn their works into NFTs, which are minted, traded, and sold on the platform.
From a provenance perspective, you would know exactly like where the art originated from and where it's been sold, like into perpetuity, essentially.
That's important for digital art, which is typically easy to copy. Owners of NFTs hold the authorized original art in a digital wallet. In addition to giving digital artists more exposure, NFTs allow them to make money in different ways.
There are a lot of cases where artists sell art at a time where they're not that famous, and then later on down the line in the secondary markets, the art sells for many, many multiples more, but they don't reap any of the rewards.
Blockchain platforms use smart contracts that are programmed to execute transactions based on certain conditions. Critics say the buzz around NFTs make it a highly speculative market, and it remains to be seen whether the current movement is a bubble that'll eventually burst. Still, artists like Neil White are excited for the new medium.
It's pretty fun to kind of feel like I'm sort of making art in like a more like futuristic form.
And that future may well be filled with NFTs. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
That's all for VOA Asia. Find us on Facebook, VOA Asia, on Twitter at VOA Asia, and on Instagram, YouTube, and at VOAnews.com. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Jessica Stone. I'm Chris Cascio in Washington. Bye now.